From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. No matter who he or she is, Georgia's next governor will have the power to reshape the state's politics, quite literally. In 2021, state legislators will redraw their own respective districts, as well as Georgia's congressional districts based on data from the 2020 census. The next governor gets to approve or veto those new maps. Charles Bullock is author of Redistricting, the Most Political Activity in America. He's also professor of political science at the University of Georgia and joins us now from WUGA in Athens. Charles, welcome.
Thank you. Pleasant to be here, Virginia.
So based on that title, The Most Political Activity in America, why do you call it that?
Well, because it has such long-lasting impact. The stakes are so high. Districts that get drawn in 2021 will probably, with maybe some minor modifications, be in place for a decade. So you get to shape the elections not just for 2022, but for 2024, 26, 28, 30. So if the maps are particularly friendly to one of the parties, it may guarantee their majority status in the chambers of the legislature for a decade.
So how and when did redistricting become so political?
Well, it really begins in 1962, the redistricting revolution, because before that, the courts wouldn't touch the whole issue of redistricting. So states rarely redrew their districts. They redrew congressional districts only if they gained or lost a seat. And in terms of state legislative chambers, they maybe didn't touch those at all. Well, now, after each census, you have to adjust the populations. The word is one person, one vote. Mm-hmm. And so because of population shifts, you have to make adjustments.
Right. So without getting too far into the weeds, can you bring us through the process for drawing Georgia's voting districts?
Well, we will get the census data probably the last week of 2020. And to that will then be married political data. Now, the Census Bureau doesn't collect that. So the smallest unit the Census Bureau uses is called a census block. Mm-hmm. Of course, the smallest political unit is a precinct, which is made up of many census blocks. So for probably the next 6, 7, 8 months, there'll be work going on at the Legislative Reapportionment Office, and that's been in business now for about 40 years. And they'll merge the political data and the population data together, and that's what will then be used when the governor calls a special session, probably August, maybe September of 2021, and they'll sit down to draw these new maps.
Well, let me go through what's happened so far in Georgia to better understand this. Normally, districts only get redrawn once every 10 years or so, which is what you're describing. So why were districts redrawn back in 2015?
Okay, well, I said usually those are set in place. Now, they're virtually every legislative session, there'll be some minor adjustments. Sometimes it's because a legislator wants to move to a new house which is nearby but not quite in the district the legislator's represented, so they'll loop that in. Sometimes it'll be to make it easier for election officials. But the adjustments that were made in 2015 appear to have been done to help prop up two Republicans whose districts were undergoing demographic changes, which made them much more competitive.
So there are no parameters at all on that kind of thing? There's no other oversight other than we just wanted to include these two houses?
That's exactly right, yeah. I mean, clearly, you know, someone or a group could challenge it in court, but otherwise, no, especially now that we're not longer subject to Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. Now, prior to 2013, any kind of adjustment like this would have to have gotten approval either by the Department of Justice or by the District Court of the District of Columbia.
So let's go through that. Earlier this year, a federal district court found compelling evidence that in 2015, state lawmakers redrew districts along racial lines to protect the General Assembly's Republican majority. Those state legislators who redrew the maps, however, said it was party, not race, that was the basis for these new districts. Can you go a little bit further in that ruling and that defense?
Yeah, that defense goes back to a Supreme Court decision for 2000, and that involved a case out of a congressional district out of North Carolina, and the challenge was that it had been drawn along racial lines, and the state said, no, we were just trying to draw a Democratic district. Well, now the court did acknowledge that at least in the South, a heavily Democratic district is probably one that also has a high concentration of African Americans. Mm-hmm. But for the last now about 18 years or so, if you can convince a court that, oh, no, we turned off, and again, literally you turn off a thing on your computer so it doesn't show this, turn off the race data and turn on the partisan data, courts have generally let that go. Now, there were also three cases before the Supreme Court during this last term which did try to get at whether partisan gerrymandering might be something that courts would strike down. Supreme Court did not bite on those, though there's a North Carolina case which will have another hearing probably in this current session. But right now, you can pretty much do whatever you want to as long as your explanation is we were trying to take care of our party and disadvantage the other party.
So, first, why is partisanship an acceptable justification and not race?
Okay, well, race is a suspect category, and any time in any kind of context in which you're separating people on the basis of race, you have to come up with an extraordinarily compelling reason to do so. But courts look at party, and indeed, although courts will now at least hear cases involving charges of partisan gerrymandering, prior to 1986, if you came in and said the other party took advantage of our party, courts would say, well, you'd have done the same thing, so get out of here. You didn't even have standing to go to court. For the last 30, 32 years, courts have at least said, okay, we'll hear the case. But so far, no Supreme Court case has ever found an instance in which the partisan gerrymandering was so bad that the court threw out the districts.
In fact, some people do say, well, if lawmakers can't do this fairly, let an impartial third party like the courts, as you alluded to, or computer algorithms, that's another proposal, decide. But when this gerrymandering case came before the Supreme Court earlier this year, Chief Justice John Roberts backed away from that model. Let's hear him.
If you're the intelligent man on the street and the court issues a decision and let's say, oh, the Democrats win, the intelligent man on the street is going to say it must be because the Supreme Court preferred the Democrats over the Republicans. And that's going to come out one case after another as these cases are brought in every state. And that is going to cause very serious harm to the status and integrity of the decisions of this court in the eyes of the country.
So avoiding the political thicket, as the saying
Absolutely.
Goes, in the
right.
Supreme Court history. But what does that actually mean? Do you think that people came away thinking, oh, okay, then it is a fair process, rather than the Supreme Court is on one side or the other?
I suspect most people at least think about this, probably have some suspicions that one side or the other has its thumb on the scale when it comes to drawing districts.
But we should make clear that Republicans in the case of, for example, in Georgia, but not the only party that's been accused of gerrymandering, Democrats redistricted Georgia to their advantage in the early 2000s. So can you take us back to that time? What did Democrats do to preserve their own power?
Well, those are some of the most extraordinary maps that you'd ever see. And the reason was because Democrats knew that unless they took extraordinary actions, almost any other kind of plan would result in a Republican majority in both the House and Senate. So Democrats were desperate to maintain the majorities that they had had for well over a century. And so they packed Republicans, i.e., put extra Republicans into districts to kind of soak up their majority, and then they tried to stretch out the Democratic minority by having underpopulated districts there. And the three-judge federal panel in Atlanta struck that down because it was seeking to advantage one part of the state as opposed to other parts of the state.
You said it looked extraordinary. Is that like, you
oh,
know,
really
we've seen
did.
These crazy, you know, I've seen these kind of like art doodles based on gerrymandering. It just completely, you know, one side juts out into one direction. It's a pretty complicated process, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah, and part of it is driven by the need to equalize out populations. And so when you're drawing congressional districts, not state legislative districts, but congressional districts, you really need to zero out the population differences. So you literally are going along the edges of a district, you know, adding a few people, subtracting a few people. And then another thing which also drives it, and sometimes has resulted in strange shapes, is the need to draw districts which are likely to give minorities opportunity to elect their candidates of choice. Now, sometimes, like the 5th District in Atlanta, that's not a problem because there's such a large concentration of African Americans. But when they initially drew the 13th District, the one which is represented by David Scott, were trying to make it so it would probably elect an African American, They end up with a district that had the shape that looked like a dead cat on the expressway is what it got known as. It looked like a cat that had been kind of flattened out on the expressway and driven over many times.
That's a terrible image. But is it, you know, how would you see it? If you considered how districts should look if they weren't gerrymandered, what would they look like?
Well, you know, the perfect geometric shape, you know, is a circle, but you couldn't have a state with a whole series of circle districts. So to some extent, you probably do want to take in natural boundaries, a mountain range, a river, or something like this. But you're going to end up with some strange shapes simply as you go about trying to have, let's say, districts that represent communities of interest, which are not necessarily following nice compact lines. But you could certainly come up with maps which don't have some of the extraordinary shapes we've seen historically in Georgia.
Georgia's next governor will play a key role in redistricting Georgia's political boundaries. And my guest, political science Charles Bullock, calls redistricting the most political activity in America. Charles, give us a lay of the land, though. Where do Georgia's congressional and state legislature districts stand now? I mean, do current districts obviously favor one party or the other?
Yeah, very much so. 10 of our 14 congressional districts are represented by Republicans, and over 60% of our state House and state Senate districts have Republicans. Now, it's probably unrealistic to think that we should have proportional representation. Our system is not designed for that, like the European systems are. So almost any plan, no matter how fair, is probably going to give an advantage, almost certainly will give an advantage to the majority party, whichever one it is. Yeah, the you know, undoubtedly, if Democrats had drawn the maps, say, in 2011, they'd do somewhat better unless they, again, went through extraordinary measures, and I'm not sure they could even do it, would not have been able to draw a majority for themselves. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so let's play this out. If Stacey Abrams wins, what would she and Democrats be able to accomplish in terms of redistricting, given that the General Assembly will likely maintain a Republican majority?
Yeah, it's almost certain it will. So what a Democratic governor could do is it would give Democrats a seat at the table. So the legislature would draw districts. They would then present them to the governor because a redistricting plan is simply a piece of legislation. And like other pieces of legislation, the governor can exercise a veto. So having a Democratic governor would mean that the maps would be less favorable to Republicans. I suspect Republicans would probably still come out with a majority in each chamber, but there would be some need to build in some additional Democratic districts as opposed to if Republicans had complete control. Now, of course, one thing might happen is the governor might veto a plan. There might be a deadlock between the governor and the legislature, in which case then it gets kicked to the courts.
Right. So theoretically, one way to remove partisan politics from the equation is to send it to the courts. But play this out for me. If Brian Kemp becomes governor, how would you anticipate districts changing in 2021?
Well, there would be then an effort made by Republicans to ensure that they have a set of maps that would guarantee their majority until the 2032 election. So there would, at the margins, be some additional Republican districts that would be drawn as opposed to a situation in which a Democratic governor could say, no, you're not going to go that far.
Are lawmakers' efforts to draw districts in their favor any real match for the rapid demographic changes in the state now?
I guess I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
Well,
here.
I'm saying that, you know, if the populations are changing so quickly
right.
and growing,
right.
and especially if we're becoming a majority-minority state, is there enough, can there be enough effort to redraw things to retain a Republican majority or a Republican's
yeah.
favor?
Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah, so yeah, all right. So you're looking down the road trying to guess what's going to happen over the next 10 years.
Right.
And so what that— The break, then, that puts on a majority is that you do not want to slice your majorities too thin. You don't want to be drawing districts that you think you can win at 51-52%, which if you do that, you know, you maximize the number of seats you could draw for yourself. So if you get greedy in that sense, then you run the risk that as the population changes, you're going to lose a lot of districts. Yeah, so you try to anticipate and probably draw districts which would be maybe 55-60% in favor of your party, which then gives you a margin of error as populations shift.
So what about the idea that computer algorithms should draw the lines of districts instead of politicians, because that way it's more, quote unquote, fair.
Well, what would happen, and there's a political scientist who does this, is you would kind of set your computer up and say, draw me 100, draw me 1,000 maps. Okay, well, what that would do would give you a normal distribution. So you'd say, all right, given the population in this state and the way it's distributed, you'd expect for there to be an 8-6 or a 9-5 kind of split. But still, legislature at some point is going to have to pick a particular map, because there are going to be, you know, literally an infinite number of ways that you could redraw this state.
Charles, you call it the title of your book about the most political activity in America as redistricting. So how about it, though? Is the toothpaste already out of the tube? If we're already this deeply entrenched in politics, is there any way that reform could change this process?
Well, yeah, a popular reform is to take it out of the hands of the legislature and put it in the hands of a commission. In recent years, California and Arizona have done this. Some other states have it on the ballot this year. Florida had an initiative, in which you talked about that process with your previous guest, which was passed in 2010, in which they didn't take the process away from the legislature, but they instructed the legislature not to give extraordinary emphasis to either party or to incumbency. And there have been several suits which have been brought pursuant to that initiative change in the Constitution, and the plaintiffs have won in those, and as a result, that state has had to go through several iterations of redrawing its districts. Mm. So there are several ways you could put a check on what the legislature can do.
UGA professor, political science professor Charles Bullock, what a great amount of things to think about, and thank you so much for the clarity today.
Thank you.
He's author of Redistricting, the Most Political Activity in America. And we want to know if the district lines have changed in around your house in recent years. Let us know. We're on Facebook and on Twitter. This is On Second Thought.